Welcome to Small Business Big Network, the podcast for small business owners who want big results from their networking. I'm Liz Drury, a freelance voiceover artist who knows that if you're not working, then networking could help. Sophie Kirk is the founder of MELP Group, a business which helps people and companies with mental health and well-being. Sophie didn't enjoy her first experience of networking, but since then, she's made lots of friends through it. Thank you very much for being my guest on the podcast today, Sophie.
No worries at all. Thank you for having me.
Now, your business is all about well-being and mental health, and I think that's an area you've kind of always worked in, is that right?
Yes, yeah, pretty much always been in the area to do with health and mental health. Started out in Chinese medicine, traditional Chinese medicine, and I did my bachelor of science degree in that. I wrote my research dissertation in bipolar, and yeah, went on from there really, and it's just adapted and evolved from there.
Yeah, I don't think I've come across anyone who's studied a degree in Chinese medicine before. That sounds really quite unusual.
Yeah, I guess not for me, because I had a class full of people that I studied it with, but
Yeah.
but yeah, I guess for the UK it's fairly unusual, and I guess there's not many places where you would study it in the UK, but hopefully, you know, things are changing, and as we kind of move into, I don't know, different ways of looking at health, which I think people are more and more trying to find their own routes to things. You know, it's becoming more and more common, I think.
Yeah. And what was it that attracted you to that in the first place?
So I was in my very, very early 20s, and I never knew what I wanted to particularly do with my life. As many people don't. I mean, choosing that at 16 is like a long shot, isn't it?
Yes.
But I did think I might have worked something out by then, and I just hadn't. And I actually, you know, I didn't do my GCSEs, and I didn't do my A levels, because I was particularly misbehaved at school. And so for me, anything I had to do, I had to start from scratch. Mm. So that kind of made it like you can really do anything then, because whatever it is, you're going to have to start right from the beginning, which then made it a bit more complex for me to choose, because there's more choices. And I had a bit of a moment with a friend of mine at the time, and I just, you know, said, I don't know what to do with my life. And we kind of went through some criteria of, yeah, I knew I wanted to help people. That was a big thing. I wanted to work for myself. And I think that was pretty much it that I knew at that point. And we'd done some brainstorming, and we came out with that. And I found the uni and kind of went along to the open day to have a look, and just went, okay, yeah, let's give this a go. And then obviously had to have a chat with them because I didn't have any A-levels or any GCSEs. And we had a meeting, and I just said, look, I haven't, but I reckon I could do it. And they kindly let me in. I had to do a little exam, and they said, okay, that's fine, come along. And that's how it all started, really.
Yeah. And so what did you do after you got that qualification? What was your first job after that?
So I went into private practice. So I set up a clinic. I just rented a room in a clinic and went there and started practicing treating patients. And I would, you know, I was specialized in mental health back then. I also studied cognitive behavioral therapy as well, and to kind of marry the Eastern and Western approaches. And I did specialize in mental health back then, but because of how I trained, I could treat anything. So I did. Mm. So I kind of saw all sorts. I got loads of bags of experience. And I actually, at the time, it was quite a long few years ago now, when Groupon was really new. And I remember doing a Groupon offer. So I had loads of people, like I was inundated. I made no money at all, but but I got bags of experience, and that's kind of what I wanted. So,
yeah. And you've been quite young at that point. What was that like, sort of starting out, you know, as a young person, and with all these people suddenly coming to you, and you're kind of learning on the job, I guess, aren't you?
Yeah. I mean, we've done student clinics, so we had a clinical phase of my course. So we kind of had that practice, that supervision, which is great. But yeah, I mean, I think actually being a little bit younger, I mean, I was in my sort of mid to late 20s by the time I finished the course, and got into private practice and all of that. So yeah, I guess I was quite young, but I've got bags of life experience, and I always have. So I kind of had quite a challenging journey early on in life. I left school quite early. I was actually pregnant by the time I was 16. Had an abusive relationship, like from the age of 16, which is just terrible. But so I think where I've kind of been through quite a journey myself, people coming in and telling me all sorts of, and you do hear all sorts, but it didn't faze me too much. But it also puts your life into perspective, you know. Like, I've been through a challenging times, but actually the things that I've heard from other people makes that sound not so challenging at all, really. So, you know, everyone has their own level of stuff that they're dealing with, and it's all valid. But like, I think it's great to kind of have those moments of reflection to go, yeah, wow, like some people out there are really suffering.
But I think having had your own sort of traumatic journey, it gives you, you know, you're able to empathize perhaps more with the people because you've been through something yourself, and I guess they will perhaps trust you more because of that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not, I yeah, I mean, I've I am very empathetic, and I do think that comes from my experiences. And I think that comes out as well. And I'm very non-judgmental as well, quite naturally, and also very resilient. And again, yeah, that's like lived life experiences, I think, that have created that combination of skills that's really useful in the therapy room when you combine it with a load of qualifications as well. It means that kind of, you know, and even with the work I do now, you know, I always think I'm coming at here, you know, qualified, but I'm also coming here as a human being and understanding the stresses that people go through and the overwhelm and the, you know, the ups and downs of life and everything that that brings and continues to bring. None of us get off lightly. I know that for sure.
So tell me about your current company and how that came about.
So it's been like a kind of a growth, really, from private practice. I guess when I was in private practice, what I realized was that you know, I'd see a lot of people with burnout. I'd see, you know, students with stress, and we work in all of those areas now. But by the time they got to me, it's already quite far down the line. And that I found sad, really, more than anything, because actually, for the most part, you could look at the journey and say, actually, if, you know, 4 years ago, we'd done these very simple steps that you could have done yourself. You didn't, wouldn't even need me for. You'd never have those years of pain and end up here, where actually at that point where we're trying to unpick years of it then, which takes a while and is, you know, not necessarily the nicest experience to go through, you know. It's a challenging experience, but it has to be done at that point. So I'm really passionate about getting information out there for prevention more than anything, and like prevention in the sense of, you know, those everyday stresses that we get that just accumulate over time, you know, the feeling of anxiety we got at a moment, which then now every time we have that moment, it gets worse and worse and worse. And this happens, and it's happened to me as well. I remember when I first went networking, actually, I was in a room full of like 100 people, and I had to stand up and, you know, say something about my business. And I found it terrifying. And then every time I went after, but I'm not one to give up very easily, so I carried on going. But you know, every time I went after for a long time, I would be very, very anxious, you know, and it probably wouldn't externally show, but inside I was like a wreck. And it took me a little while to get my head around that and like do some visualization techniques and some, and also and practice as well. But for a lot of people, like experiences like that can really halt their lives. You know, if something starts to, and because they don't understand why, like luckily I'll understand why, and I know I can do these things and I can work on that, and if not I can reach out here and there. But most people don't know that, and so they'll just go, oh my goodness, I've got this huge problem, I don't know what to do about it, I'm gonna just pretend it doesn't exist in, or push it down, or just avoid doing that big scary thing altogether. And then over time that just accumulates. So yeah, for me, it's getting that information out there to people, but in a really holistic way as well. And that's what we do now, is work with businesses and schools, both teachers and students, sometimes parents as well, and sports teams as well at the moment, mostly women's sports teams. And we're just out there giving information, talks, education, training, in mental health and different emotions and how you navigate them and why they feel like this and that and what you can do about it. But from a really holistic standpoint, so, you know, I've always married the Eastern and Western approaches, and I really believe that there's not one therapy type that fixes everybody.
Yeah.
So we need to start getting information out there, not just on CBT counselling, which is what is most popular out there and is easily accessible. Well, not that easily at the moment, but supposedly easily accessible. But if that doesn't work for you, then you can, and lots of people do, end up thinking that they're stuffed, basically. They're just going to have to be like this for the rest of their lives. And that can be a really sad and difficult place to be in. But actually, there's so much more that can be done. And getting that information to people, for me, is really key. And I think prevention over cure as well, it for the most part, whenever possible, is going to be really important.
Yeah. You do quite a lot of work in the construction sector, don't you? Why that sector particularly?
So construction has got really poor mental health in general. As a industry, they've got really high suicide rates, like really, really high suicide rates within the industry. I mean, men, suicides are 2/3 men always anyway. And that's kind of gone through years and years and years and years. It's been like that. So men, you know, they approach mental health in a very different way. And obviously in construction, I think it's about 83% men it is at the moment. That might be slightly off. So don't quote me. Last time I checked, it was about 83% men. So they've got lots of men there. And also, you know, a certain type of man as well, not to generalize too much, but it's just that it breeds toxic masculinity, and it breeds that not being able to talk about things and the stresses of life and how life is at the moment as well. So just really keen to kind of access that area and provide support, but again, in a different way. So I think women have not led the conversation on much in this world, but they have really led the conversation on mental health. And that's because men don't want to talk about it. But it means that a lot of the process that we've historically given to support mental health means reaching out, talking to people, you know, opening up. And men don't want to do that. Okay. Statistically, men don't want to do that. Not all men, obviously, but statistically, men don't want to do that. So I've spent a lot of time looking at strategies and structures that we can implement in businesses like construction that are male heavy, that will help men access support and get access in the way that they need it, which is online, usually self-help tools, things like that, that they can access themselves without anyone knowing, without asking, without having to reach out and have that difficult conversation. And for some men, that's enough. Those self-help tools will be enough. And for some men, it's a bridge to further help, you know, just a bit of, give them a bit of understanding, then they can feel a bit better about coming forward. But I do believe that just because people don't want to talk doesn't mean they don't deserve help. And men fall in that category quite a lot. So I'm really passionate about helping that area.
Yeah. And how do you think that mental health in the workplace could be improved? Are there some, you know, simple things that employees could be doing?
Yes. There is. So first of all, it's funny. I was having this conversation with someone earlier today, and it was get the basics done first. So don't try and implement mental health or well-being initiatives when everybody's workload is far too much, or you have a toxic culture, or, you know, there's all these things that need to be addressed either at the same time or before or during. Because if, you know, putting on workshops for stress or giving people tools to help with their mental health or aligned to call should they need to, and these are all great things, but, you know, if the fundamentals are, you know, your boss is micromanaging you, there's a toxic culture, you're being bullied at work because of it, or you just got 2 days work to do in one day every single day and it's all just too much, it's like firefighting, isn't it? Yeah. Like, you know, get the fundamentals right as well. Don't expect someone to be able to come in with this mental health initiative and strategy to change all of that as well, because it's you know, you've got to do a bit of both. And I think people miss that a lot of the time. But other things that they can do is keep open conversations and dialects going. Be really aware that drip feeding is far better than a big mental health week. So a lot of companies will go in and say, we're going to do this mental health week, we're going to do a big thing this week. But that's not the right way around to do it, because you do a big thing this week and then the next week it's forgotten about. So it's like anything, you need to kind of drip feed it over time. Okay, so first of all, it's not overwhelming for people, it's not scary, we're not trying to say there's something wrong with people, it's just this like training and sessions and support services that we're going to put in over time, and always nudging people to so they know that you're there, and do that, and then eventually things will change and people will start, and even the most trickiest of customers eventually will start to change around and start to implement small things into their lives, and that's all they need to do. It only has to be a small change, but by just doing like a, you know, a tick box 1 week thing is not going to change anyone's lives, okay? But these little bits over time will do.
Now, we've talked a little bit already about networking. How much networking do you do for your business, and what kind of networking do you like to do?
Goodness, okay, so I've done loads of networking over the years, some good, some bad. At the moment, I'm at Network My Club, which I really enjoy. It's quite an informal networking environment. So there's no pitches. Not that those pitches scare me anymore. I can I do public speaking now as well. So, you know, really have got over that. But I just quite like that kind of forming relationships, bonds, friendships, hanging out, and over time people get to know you and then naturally refer anyway. Kind of a non-pressured networking environment. I really like that. But I've done it in the past. I've done the, you know, the BNIs and the those more structured ones in the past. And they work for some people, and I don't think there's anything against them. I was at one earlier today, which is more like a peer group. So it's like so it's smaller groups, which is quite nice. I do prefer smaller groups to really large groups, I think.
So you said you've had some good experiences and some bad. What kind of bad experiences have you had of networking?
goodness. Well, the first one, I guess, would be the terrified of the 60 seconds, but we got through that one. oh, God. You know, so definitely had some bitchiness in networking. women are not always standing together. And I guess actually probably quite naively when I came into networking, I assumed that women would stand together. And I think generationally, my generation does. But then I think there's other generations that have had to be more amongst the men in business and have had to kind of fight more in that way than maybe we do. And it's created they're just a bit more abrasive and not so naturally inclusive. And I think that's not anyone's fault as such. I just think that's kind of a generational thing maybe. But yes, definitely some pitchy women, which is not very nice. And, you know, no, it's not very nice. And the experience that I had, I found out and continue to find out from other women that I meet along the route that they've had the exact same experience with exactly the same people. So it can be like particularly nasty. And then what other bad experience have we had? I mean, of course I've had loads of good experiences as well. I don't want to seem like I'm moaning too much. men can be tricky networking. I do prefer when men talk to my face. I can say that. particularly when I'm networking and in a business environment, it's very awkward if they don't. But yeah, those sorts of things, I think. And then the awful ones, which just want to sell everything to you instantly.
Yeah,
so you must have
yeah.
heard that time and time again.
Yeah.
So I've had like one-to-one Zoom calls with people after I've met them once, and they've just basically given me a pitch deck.
Yes.
Okay. And that's it. And then they don't really want to talk about anything else. And I'm like,
Yeah, that never works well, does it? So you've had good experiences. Well, you must have had good experiences because you're continuing to do the networking. So what do you get from it?
So networking, friendships. So when I moved to this area about 7 years ago, I didn't really know anyone here. But I now have like a great friend base in the area because of local networking that I done when I first moved here for my business. So that's really nice. And it also means like if I need a plumber or an electrician or something's going wrong at the house, I know someone I can call, because like where I moved from before, I'd know those people like through my dad or something because he was local there. But like they're not going to come all the way out to where I am now. So it's a bit like daunting really without those people that I've known for years around. So that's been really helpful. So the friend network and also the network of people that can help and support you if you need something and you can trust as well. Although you do sometimes still get your fingers burnt there as well. you have to be a bit careful. But generally, I would say most people are trustworthy in that respect. They're trying to do a good job so that you will then tell other people. And business, of course, that's what we're there for. Ultimately, you know, I can have as many friends in the group as I like. If I'm not making business there, I'm going to have to leave eventually because like it might just be that those people aren't the people that know the people I need to be connected with.
Yeah.
And that's okay. Yeah. Doesn't mean I don't like them anymore or anything like that. But it's like, hang on, this is a business activity. It's all nice to have lunch and whatever, but like, let's do business whilst we're here as well. But I do get business from it, I do get friends from it, and I continue to make friends from it. And I do a lot of sort of more national networking things now because we work kind of nationally with the app and everything we do. It makes sense for me to do it that way.
And we haven't mentioned the app yet, so tell me something about the app.
So the app, so the app is like everything else that we do, very holistic. And holistic meaning that it's just got loads of different avenues on it that you can go down. It's a self-help tool and it came out of COVID, so kept me busy in that time. But we had a load of lessons and things online from different therapists. I had a clinic at the time in Farnham, and we had when lockdown came, we got the therapist to put things online to help people through. The feedback from that was that people wanted it when they wanted it, not like live. Yeah. So it's like, okay, fine, we'll film all of the information and then we'll put it online. And then I thought, no, let's put it into an app. So that's what we've done. So we've got now hundreds of videos from all different therapists, sort of counselors, coaches, hypnotherapists. We've got EFT, NLP, which is emotional freedom technique and neuro-linguistic programming. We've got mindfulness, meditation, nutrition for your mental health. That's what I mean. It's completely holistic. Mm-hmm. Like anything, any way you want to, whether it's very practical tools, because some people are very practical and pragmatic, or very esoteric, no tools like meditations and yoga nidra. You can kind of go either way with it. And it's one of them. You'll never like everything on it because it's just not set up that way. The idea is that you find there's something for everyone, but not everything's for everyone. And the thing with the therapist there was we kind of filmed them, and the idea was what would you tell someone if they came in and said that they were anxious? What would you tell them to do? So it's just therapist tools, like what they would tell you to do if you went to go see them. And obviously they've got loads of tools in their back pocket. So we've got loads of videos and they're very simple to follow, easy to follow, bits of advice really. And they're just there for people to, just easy to access. Yeah.
Great.
So I like it. Obviously.
It sounds like a really useful tool. So if people want to find out more about you and your business and the Melp app, what's the best place for them to get in touch with you?
So you can go to the website, melt.org.uk, something like that. There's a few different ones. Or you could go to melt.group as well, actually, but that's not the main one I put out there, but it will take you to the same page. So yeah, just go melt.group and you'll get there. Yeah, so that would be the best way to contact me. Or you can email me, which is Sophie at melt.group. So you can email me there. Feel free to. Lots of people do email me. But that's the best way to get hold of me if you want anything, really. Yeah, is email.
Lovely. Well, thank you for being my guest, and I've really enjoyed our conversation.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to Small Business Big Network. If you found this podcast useful, please do rate, review, and subscribe. And don't forget to share it with the rest of your network too.